funding to community colleges in an equitable manner. The previous funding model was only basing funding on enrollment numbers. This takes other factors, resource requirements, distance between centers, and so forth. What the funding model doesn't do, it does not bring in additional funding. It is just telling us how to use and distribute equitably the current funding that we have. But what it also does, it is telling us something which we couldn't tell before. We knew we were not funding our colleges adequately, but we didn't know by how much and in which area. And this funding model is able to tell us that. It is giving us an indication that for 2023, for operational costs, we are supposed to be funding our colleges with 876,361,000 rand. But the reality in terms of the funding that we have for operations of our colleges is 211,641. Now, this tells us that there is a funding gap of at least 76% that is needed just in the next financial year for the sector. Transfers to colleges is what is happening at the moment. And the moment is important because these colleges need funds to run their operations. We have given them their third tranche in October, and they are going to be getting their fourth tranche in January of 2023 to enable them to run their operations. In conclusion, the very small budget that community colleges have, which is just under 2% of the total budget of the department, we are saying that as community colleges, we must do the best that we can that we have. Of course, that 2.4 billion budget, which is the 2% of the total DTT budget, the majority of it, more than 90%, goes to the compensation of employees. We have achieved some milestones in this in 2022, but this has not been without challenges, and we acknowledge that we have these challenges and we continue to work on these challenges. Some of the milestones that we have achieved is that in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but I need to be accurate, we have finally awarded the NSF award letters to the colleges for the 200 million that was committed at the Skills Summit, which was hosted by the minister. So colleges will be able to start implementation in January. We have 80 million additional funding, and this is for compensation of employees. This 80 million we will use to fix the critical posts. Again, I must indicate that it is not sufficient. Of this 80 million, 50 million was given to us by the TVET branch, and it is at no loss to the TVET branch because this is money that they would have declared as savings. We are constantly increasing on CETA and QCTO accredited programs that are offered in our colleges. We are working with NGOs. I'm citing one example here as DPS, but there are others, because we acknowledge that in our communities there's also a need for non-formal programs, and we work on that. I've spoken to the issue of the new funding model. Standardization of the conditions of service of lecturers did bring some instability in the sector, particularly towards the end of last year and beginning of this year. But we are not yet there. We still are facing with challenges. However, we are beginning to stabilize, and the Human Resource and Management Chief Directorate is finalizing on this. Migration of exams took place with effect from the 1st of April of this year. And for the first time, because the November exams are massive, there is a slide here that talks to how massive the exams are. Overall, the exams are running well, but they also have not been without challenges. We have experienced challenges with our exams, but we've been able to move in and step in and deal with those challenges very, very swiftly. We have done everything as a department, and I must say our chief financial officer was working tirelessly and leading in this process of getting 1 billion for community college infrastructure program. All the work that was required to be done by the department, the CFO and the team have done it and submitted to National Treasury. We had a meeting with National Treasury last week, and they indicated to us that they will give us the final outcome of the 1 billion for community colleges infrastructure program. And lastly, on higher health programs, higher health historically has mainly been working, when they started off, they were only working with universities. And they are well developed and established in universities, but Dr. Lewin is much more better positioned to speak on that. And then after that, they moved on and they work with chief colleges. But I'm also said that now higher health has come into the space of community colleges, and they are running community colleges programs. And they've also given us coordinators placed at some of our community colleges. It is certainly not all of them. The interventions are still not at a scale that is required to make a significant impact in our community colleges. But we cite it as a milestone because it is a good start, small as it is, and we are looking at ways in which this area can grow. Very much on our channel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, we have divided our presentation into three parts. I'll ask the to start with the first part that relates to budget, go around the issue of guidelines, update on the 2022 appeals, and conclude the presentation on the new developments. Thank you.
But we can't hear anything. What's going on?
I was about to find out if it's my system or everybody has got problems with hearing. Colleagues, can I find out? Can anybody hear what is being said here? I can't hear anything.
We can't hear.
No, we can't hear, unfortunately.
So maybe the presenters must sort it out.
I have. As I was saying,
Chair, can you intervene? Because I'm not sure what type of meeting is happening now. We can't hear anything. Nothing is happening.
I doubt if the presenters can hear us. Because they apparently they are continuing to talk.
If I could Honorable members, can you hear me now? You hear? Okay, honorable members on the line. Participants online, honorable members.
Yeah, no. Are you offended too much?
Yeah. Hello. Okay, can I note if anyone on the virtual platform can hear me? Can Khalees hear?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so they can hear me. Now what do we do?
No, it's that laptop is old.
All right, Honorable Itie, Okay. Colleagues on the virtual platform, sincerest apologies. We really don't know what's happening, but we've asked for IT to come to the venue and assist us. However, colleagues can try and follow for now with the presentation that is being screened on the platform. Honorable members, I think I see two on the virtual platform. They do have these presentations in full. But please just bear with us as we get IT to come and assist us. Thanks, colleagues. You may continue, Cecil.
Thank you.
Submissions of applications for funding and immediate funding decisions for SASA recipients. Applications are received and processing of SASA recipients for immediate funding decisions. Case management was released with the opening of applications. Eligibility assessment activities are awaiting availability of data and academic results. Financial eligibility is awaiting finalization of SARS 2022 tax assessment and SARS data being availed. Then eligibility will commence. It's awaiting finalization of an international portal and availing of student results, and academic eligibility will then commence. The appeals, this process kicks in as soon as the applications are being processed, applications which have been rejected. Then the below channels will be released once we have stabilized the new system and all issues picked up have been addressed. This is due to the time it takes to release updates in some of these platforms as validations involved before it's being made available to the public. It takes about 2 to 6 weeks. A decision was made to halt releasing of these channels until the new system has stabilized and issues have been resolved. These channels will include WhatsApp and USSD. Chatbot functionality with firing of contact center solution, as it has a chatbot functionality. We cannot have multiple chatbots running at the same time. I will then hand over to COO.
Chair, and greetings to honourable members and to all the colleagues that are attending the session today. I will be taking you through our readiness as far as the policy is concerned. The funding guidelines is a very important element of making sure that we are ready to start the new year clear policy guidelines. Just in terms of a brief background, NASA started developing the guidelines in 2022, and that's after the entity instituted the new board that came and really attempted or tried to steer the entity in a certain direction. As really looked at areas that needed to be improved, enhanced, and really make sure that NASPERS fully implements its mandate. So some of those positions touched on policy aspects such as the academic eligibility criteria, issues of learning materials, issues of allowances, bringing parity between the teachers and university students, and just making sure that NASPERS is actively involved in the development of the guidelines. So much of that work that was done in 2022, therefore, has been referred in the 2023 policy. Just then we revisited those areas that were in transitional arrangements and those areas that we needed to do further work on to make sure that we implement, we have much more scientific basis of why we are making the changes. So we considered a number of consultations. I see my slides are not ordered properly. We have consulted a number of stakeholders in terms of formulating the 2023 guidelines, including consulting the Department of Higher Education and Training, that is our shareholder, both the University branch and the TVET branch. We have consulted USAF, we have consulted SACPO NEC, Student Leadership, DVSA, HEDSA, Higher Education and Disability South Africa. So we have to make sure that the elements of the policy that we are introducing as changes or that we are enacting have got input from the relevant stakeholders. So that is why I will analyze the changes that we are making in 2023, one being on the big issue of allowances. Students have given input that they would like to see an increase in allowances, given that over the last 3 years, allowances have remained constant, and that over the years, as inflation is applied, it actually eroded. In our engagement with our shareholders, we could only be able to increase allowances to 5% maximum of inflation based on the budget that is already available. So allowances of those sectors will be increased by 5% and accommodation will be increased by 7%. On the issue of accommodation, in our transition prevention, we did highlight the 2022 policy that given the somewhat unmanaged cost of accommodation, there is a need to introduce a cap. And this cap is introduced in this 2023 policy at a maximum of 45,000 per annum per student. We do make provision in the policy for an appeal, as Dr. Lin was presenting, that there may be institutions that may be that may not be able to work with the cap, but they should be able to apply to us for consideration, and so that we don't destabilize some of those institutions. Another important element that the policy proposing is a living allowance for students, which is 6,000 per annum or 600 rand per month. We believe that this is a progressive initiative, even though the budget does not really allow us to go beyond this amount. But many times, the question that NASPERS has always had to answer is, how is it that university students do get a meal allowance, and the TVET college students are not provided? Does it mean they don't eat or eat less? So this is an attempt to really to bring that parity between the university and the TVET college students. And then the area of consideration has been the 40-kilometer radius. That was a control implemented mostly in TVET College, trying to limit the uptake of accommodation or the numbers of students in TVET colleges that access the accommodation allowance. Within the university sector, I think the policy, institution policy would only consider accommodation for students that are 10 kilometers away from campus, but for TVET College students, it was 40 kilometers away from campus. So we are done away with a 40 kilometer radius, and I've brought 10 kilometers for the two sectors. So students that reside within 2 kilometers of campus, they must be qualifying for the transport allowance. Any student that...
So I actually got another right. So I want to just sort of our process for Orana, which is waiting for us to can we just adjourn for five minutes to grab some tea, some water, but if you
Yes, I'm Ely. I can hear you. Can you hear me? Hello? I can't hear you, Ely. Yes, I am fine. Can you hear me? Because I unmuted myself. Okay. Yes, I did. I can just about hear you. Can you hear me? You're breaking up. Can you hear me when I speak online? Yes. Yes, it is unmuted. It's unmuted. Can you hear me? Hello? I'm unmuted. Can you hear me? Okay, so there's somebody that's online that can hear me.
We can hear you.
Can you hear? Okay, so which means when I'm everybody online, we can hear each other.
Yes, we can hear each other.
Okay, yes, we are clear, but I can't hear. I can't hear you.
Okay.
You're breaking up all the time when you speak, even if you try to speak.
But can you hear them?
For some reason, Sandy was very clear. So bad.
Can you hear them?
You're breaking up. It must be something to do with the venue, and for some reason, some people are clear.
Okay. Okay. Sure.
Can you try Sandy again?
That was attached to the National Assembly that burned with the fire. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it very difficult, for example, for these cameras in the room to operate, etc. I don't know who's operating. So really, apologies for that. We are trying to have these hybrid things to accommodate those who are not here, which has to be physical, but we don't have the infrastructure. The parliament doesn't have the infrastructure to do this without spending 35,000 rand for each sitting. And if we look at all the committees that we have, we would be spending a lot of money if we were to have the actual, what you call, system hired. And I think in terms of ethics, yeah, we agree with that. So thank you, Police of Nexus. I want to believe this should be your last interruption, and you can continue with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. And I'll just try to quickly gloss over the slides just to manage the time while trying to highlight the areas of change. So one of the important issues of the last year was to determine the academic progression rate for continuing students, with the understanding that continuing fundedness for students must actually be asked to pass and succeed and complete within record time. And in the last policy, NSFAS was to do further work and engage the institutions and find out what would be the recommended academic progression rate for continuing students. From the engagement that we had with the DVC's academic as well as the registrars and use of it was highly recommended that first-time students or new students that keep the status quo, that they pass at 50% plus one and be able to be still funded by NSFAS to allow them to settle at higher education institutions. And a 55% academic progression rate is recommended for implementation in 2023 for continuing students. So this means that all continuing students that they need to achieve at that rate for them to keep the NSFAS funding. There is always provision for students to appeal if there have been circumstances that made it impossible for them to achieve the required pass rate.
In terms of
student accommodation, the policy proposed last year that NSFAS looks into centralization of accreditation of private accommodation. The 2022 criteria allows NSFAS to actually facilitate this process, accredit private student accommodation, and also develop a grading system that will help establish the correct rental rate for NSFAS based on the quality and the services that are provided to students. The policy also proposes that there are controls that allows accommodation that is not meeting the minimum norms and standards to still be considered, given the fact that in certain rural areas there is no accreditable accommodation at all. So in certain instances like that, it is proposed that NSFAS and or the institution engage the landlord to agree on the rate that can be paid specifically for that particular accommodation, and then the actual cost of utilities, water, data, and electricity is to be paid directly to the students. And we have established from the areas that who were encountered with the challenges in the Free State as well as in Limpopo. And we have used those costs to really develop the baseline that we're going to put in the policy. As the CEO was indicating in the opening that some of the new initiatives that are being implemented really to assist the students, but at the same time, noticing where we are in the year, we would like to allow universities that want to continue with the current accommodation arrangements as they are to apply to NSFAS so that they keep the status quo and they continue to accredit private accommodation for students. It's just basically assisting existing capacity in the system. And the policy also proposes that NSFAS do engage in lease agreements, suitable lease agreements for students, and facilitate processes to pay the landlords directly and remove the students from the processes of landlords and engaging and negotiating lease agreements, and they get defrauded. The last initiative that is catered for in the policy is the direct payment of allowances to students into their bank. This has been a long-outstanding request of student leadership that the intermediaries be removed and NSFAS pays them directly in their bank accounts. 4 fintech companies have been appointed to start this process. Colleges have been engaged to move them away from the wallet cell phone-based payments and processes to engage with the colleges, with the students in colleges have actually started to assist the students to follow the banking process of onboarding so that they can access the cards. In the university space, NSFAS has approached 2 universities for pilots, University of Limpopo as well as Fort Hare University, while UNISA approached NSFAS to be considered as part of the pilot. With UNISA, there has been work to basically develop the onboarding processes. Other universities that are not in the pilot, the policy does allow that these apply to NSFAS to be exempted from the process, and NSFAS then will look at the motivation and then evaluate and grant the exemption that will be required. And NSFAS also reserves the right to withdraw the approval within and give notice in 3 months should the university fail to disburse the allowances as per agreement. So where we are with the guidelines, these were presented to the NSFAS board that made inputs and gave a go ahead that the guidelines can be submitted. The management is doing final changes to the guidelines, and this will then be submitted to the department because on all the proposals that we are putting forward, the minister must still concur, and we aim to release these guidelines before students register at the institutions of learning. And subsequent to that, then it will be training of various student leadership on the guidelines so that everyone is ready to start the academic year. I shall pop here and allow the CEO to present the next.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll try and be as quick as possible, given that the issues have really been introduced. So, Chair, I think in terms of the new initiatives, one wants to start with the application portal that we have introduced. We have highlighted in the presentation by the CFO that we have rolled out this new platform. We are going to further make sure that there's an app, there are WhatsApp channels, and there are chatbots. The significance of these allow us to be able to communicate with students, which also tries to reduce the volumes that we experience in our call center. And also, Chair, the portal that is an application portal is not just a portal that is for applications, but this is a system that enables us to fully, properly administer the student funding. So in essence, this would be the NSFAS learner management system, if I can call it that, or student management system. The other initiatives, Chair, that the COO has touched on is the issue of direct payments. the issue of student accommodation. The chair also made this in his introductory remarks. Chair, NSFAS role, really, we can break it down into three forms. One, we want to improve the administration of student accommodation. This looks at where we look at the process of how private accommodation providers, including institutions, apply to be accredited within the NSFAS. Where after that process, we then link students to the accommodation. We are able to sign lease agreements with landlords directly and ultimately pay landlords directly. And of course, the cost of accommodation will be determined through the grading. Chair, we all understand the limitations we've been having with this current issue. And I think even Dr. Lewin touched on the issues around that. The second part of our intervention chair looks at increasing the capacity of student accommodation. We're well aware, chair, that there is more students needing accommodation versus the available accommodation. Now, per annum, NSFAS spends approximately, it grows year on year. Last year, we spent approximately 13 billion on student accommodation. Now, chair, with this spending, NSFAS does not have a say. We do not know who gets accredited, when, how. We also do not have the power to negotiate what we are willing to pay. People charge what they want to charge to NSFAS. And of course, with that kind of buying power, if I can put it, we should be able to negotiate better. And so with that kind of capacity, we should then be able to influence the sector in making sure that there is increased accommodation capacity. Chair, I think it should be noted here that by no means NSFAS is saying that it wants to replace the role of the department, but simply we are using our balance sheet to see if there's a way we can assist in increasing this capacity. This will therefore look at issues such as private public partnerships. This will look at issues such as off-take agreements that we want to look at. And Chair, then to the point that we all understand, we've been speaking about the example of Kwakwa and the example of, let's basically say rural campuses. The reality, Chair, is that even if we said we are implementing strictly the guideline that no facility that is not accreditable can be used, it would mean virtually those students have no place to stay, because those accommodations cannot be accredited in the current state. Now, Chair, we then have proposed a developmental approach as NSFAS, wherein we understand that generally the demographics of the people that own these facilities would either be retirees, self-employed people, and they would have no mechanism to be able to raise financing to be able to meet the minimum standards. And so in this regard, we're also engaging with the Small Business Development, in particular CIFA, to see if they can avail a fund that can be used to make sure that these kind of accommodations meet the standard. Because again, we cannot leave it with the understanding that it is the status quo and not try and intervene. So in essence, Chair, that is really our approach to student funding. I'm not going to go into too much detail on it. The current state of this, Chair, is that our portal will go live we'll go live tomorrow. This is the portal then that allows the accommodation providers to apply for accreditation. So it also goes without saying that NSFAS would not necessarily have the full capacity to go and virtually check all the accommodation to make sure that it meets the standard. And so we have to go through a process of appointing accreditation providers to assist in this process. So, Chair, perhaps I should say this before there is the question of whether or not we have the money to do so, that indeed the current practice, even at an institutional level, when you're applying for accreditation, you pay for it. And in essence, they would still be doing so. And this is that kind of, from those fees, is what we will use to make sure that those people that assist us are going to be compensated. Chair, also on the issue of off-take agreements, we have advertised this. Initially, the closing date was the 10th of November, but when we looked at the portal that we had developed, we had seen that there were a number of applicants that could not access it, and so we extended it to the 2nd of December. Again, this looks at the issue of increasing the capacity, and I've already spoken to the engagement with FIFA. The issue of the direct payment solution, again, the COO touched on this, and Chair, we all understand the challenges that have been faced with by students. So, Chair, I think also just what I want to touch on is that there is this notion that NSFAS is implementing direct payments for the first time. It's actually not the first time NSFAS is implementing direct payments. NSFAS has been effecting direct payments to TVET College students through the wallet system. Chair, this committee understands very well the limitations with that. And so hence we've gone with the banking system to do direct payments. The banking system, Chair, this would allow our beneficiaries to transact in a similar manner as all of us transact in the banking, in fact, in the exact same manner that we transact with the banking facilities. But it also allows our students financial freedom. We'll recall, Chair, that the current limitations are that students can only access funds through particular specific merchants, that they are not allowed to go and acquire what they need elsewhere. This allows students to have that kind of financial freedom. Of course, Chair, even with universities, as the COO has indicated, we understand that there is an engagement, as the Chair has indicated, that we still have with universities. But our view is that this also should be rolled out, because whenever these allowances are not paid timely to students, when in fact NSFAS has paid these allowances, it becomes that NSFAS has not done so. Chair, I think just on that note, I would want to say that, I mean, for the last 2 years now, NSFAS has been paying allowances in advance, except for the first three months of the year, where we do not have our budget. But for the most part, we pay actually 3 months in advance for allowances, and yet we still get these instances where allowances are not paid timely to students. And so what the direct payment does is it provides certainty to students that, as all of us as salaried employees know, what date our payments will be made, students will be able to get that kind of certainty as well. Chair, so I'm just really, the main issue, Chair, you know, the focus when we talk about this direct payment solution tends to be about just the transacting part. We do not talk about value-added services that will come with this for students. Chair, I think we have spoken about allowances that have remained stagnant until this current proposal, by the way, which could be approved or not approved around increasing allowances. It's clear that, Chair, we need to find ways to stretch the buck for our students, namely by negotiating these value-added services around discounts our students will get. When they acquire goods such as food, such as airtime data that they need for their studies, and many other initiatives. By the way, Chair, part of these value-added services will also include financial literacy for our students, so that they understand how the banking world works, so they understand budgeting, and many other initiatives that are coming with what we are trying to negotiate with these platforms that we have. Chair, also the main stumbling issue really around the issue of the banking system is the you know we as working people understand it to be FICA that is required for the banks, but for the students, because of the nature of the transaction we have, FICA has kind of been scaled down to be know your client, where students have to essentially just indicate who they are by snapping a picture and with their ID, and then they get verified directly through Home Affairs to assess if they are who they say they are. Now, Chair, this one is the one that really is an issue, that because we should understand, Chair, that we actually ultimately have to verify or at least onboard about 800,000 beneficiaries. So which tends to be an issue. There are various channels that we use for this. It's on campus activations. This has been going on with TVET colleges. And Chair, I think at this point I should say that TVET colleges have been gracious enough to allow us to use their campuses as activation centers. We're also looking at, but also the onboarding can also be done virtually or online. And the students, we understand, have limitations with regards to data. We are negotiating with the MNOs to be able to zero rate our website such that it makes it seamless for students to onboard. We have retailers that we are going to introduce where students can go and onboard. We're also exploring other partnership arrangements with other public entities to make these onboarding platforms chair. So in essence, just the current status now for the TVET students, as of yesterday, 42% of the total population of TVET college students that are currently enrolled have actually been onboarded. In fact, starting today, we are going to be making payments to those that have opened or have gone through the KYC process. We have continued engagements, Chair, with the relevant stakeholders around this onboarding. I think, as indicated, the last engagement that we need to have will be with Yusuf in the GC. So, Chair, I think at this point, the committee just asked us to also indicate the status of our appeals. To minimize this. So, Chair, in terms of the 2022 appeals, and the committee, I would imagine, asked for this because this has been a pain point for us. In that, Chair, firstly, I think just for context, that this is the first time where applications for appeals, particularly for academic appeals, has been done to NSFAS directly. This used to be through institutions, and of course, our system had teething problems of implementation at the start of the academic year. In essence, Chair, we received about 94,000 odd applications, approximately 95,000 actually applications for students. These we've approved about 46,000 of these. Others are in the process of being finalized. The context, Chair, here is that there are because of system issues, there were students that had indeed submitted their appeal documentation, but we had to ask them to resubmit simply because there was a system issue where we could not access all the appeals. So, Chair, I think that is the high level status really that I would want to provide, and this will be the end of our presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to the NASDAQ, and really want to apologize again for all the interruptions, fearful that you experienced in between. Police can excuse themselves as the next or move back to your places as our next presenter comes on, who will be Yusuf. Which I believe is being represented by Dr. Matuta.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
I would like to firstly apologize on behalf of Professor Mutwa, the chair of the board of USAF. However, there are about six vice chancellors who are veterans, who are board members, who are with us now. Professor Mokalong from University of Limpopo, Professor Pageng from UCT, Professor Pretorius from UWC, Professor Sten Du Plessis, acting vice chancellor at Stellenbosch University, Professor Ben Huaji from Vale University of Technology, Professor Chris Ndrapo from CPUT. So these are our board members who are with us today, Chair. And I would like to greet all honorable members. We are supposed to make this presentation on the preparations for the 2023 academic year. A number of issues have been highlighted, particularly by Dr. Tandi Lewin already, but there's a level of detail which we're coming with here. Firstly, it will be on enrollments for the year, student funding, student debt, modes of teaching and learning, student accommodation, long-term, short-term, sustainability. All these have got a potential to have a bearing on the registration process for students. Looking at the enrollment, the new students or the first-time entering students or enrolling students, we are looking at about 210,000 versus an enrollment of about 1.1 million. That's about 20% of the currently enrolled students that we're envisaging, with a male-female demographic of 40% male, 60% female. And if we are including then the private sector, we're looking at 1.35 million. The distance learning, largely that's the University of South Africa, 35% versus the residential institutions at 65%. The registration dates for the returning students, it has gone back to normal compared to the COVID year, so we're not envisaging any late registrations. And also the academic year, it's supposed to finish at the usual time for 2023. And the registration, of course, will depend on sufficient funding for the bursaries which are administered by NSFAS. So what we have here, we have about 21 institutions which have been able to respond to our requests for data, with I think about five which provided either incomplete data or were not able to provide data. Members, I would like you to focus on the demand for higher education. If you look at the second last column, you will find the applicants or the number of applications and what those who have been accepted. In most instances, you'll find out that they are sitting at about 5% of the applicants. And for us, that's a demonstration of the demand for higher education that we have. And then the last column is just outlining the registration period. And you'll see that that registration period, it's either the start of the academic year, it's either end of January or in the middle of February. So what that is saying is that NSFAS would rather be ready at that time with the necessary funding. Otherwise, those students may battle to get into a university timely or timelessly. So the second slide as well, the same thing you see there, that at most what these institutions are able to admit versus applications is sitting either 10% or below, and largely about 5%, which is saying that higher education remains a subsector within the post-school education sector, which is in demand. Some institutions have already closed and will not accept late applications, but there are those which are still prepared to accept late applications. As you will see that CPUT, DUT, MUT, Rhodes University, First Forte, Walter Sisulu are prepared to accept late applications. Regarding student funding, what we have, we're concerned with is the late payment and the NSFAS challenges pertaining to the beginning of the year or the start of the year, of the academic year. So that becomes a problem, as we have outlined. You heard the NSFAS chair talking about the first 3 months where sometimes they do not have funds, and we require those funds to be available at that stage. The long-term sustainability of NSFAS versus the growth becomes a serious challenge that needs to be looked at, because it has got a bearing on the sector. Those students who have applied who cannot be taken, or those students who are expecting the NSFAS funding, who will be told that your money will follow, or whatever kind of challenges that are likely to emanate as a result of unsustainability of the growth. We saw the growth from Dr. Lewin's presentation. The missing middle still is not being funded at a national level, so there's no solution for them, and they tend to be the source of student debt, and so that becomes a problem for the university system. Coming to the student debt, the extent of the debt, it is damaging to the future sustainability of higher education institutions, because it's sitting at about 16.5 billion plus as we are speaking. So what that is saying is that on an annual basis, you'll find out that this debt is growing at a rate of about 1.5 billion. And that is money which has been budgeted for, where institutions are supposed to be growing their academic offerings, their infrastructure, using this money, and yet it ends up going towards student debt. So we do need a national solution to this problem. And also it becomes a source of student anguish and upheaval on a year-to-year basis, with some of the students being unable to get their certificates and their lives stifled as a consequence of accumulating debt, when institutions can no longer admit them because of the debt that they have. And that means inability to continue with, for instance, postgraduate studies in some cases because of the debt owed to the university. That is an area that needs to be looked at a national level. Going to the modes of teaching, we are aware of the fact that previously we had gone to either blended teaching, or we had gone to remote teaching completely. So what we are noticing is that most institutions, actually all of them, are bringing the students back to campus. within Chambers, they are offering blended teaching except for the University of South Africa, of course, which is distance learning. And what this is saying is that if we continue with this blended learning, the devices are a necessity for the students, both from NSFAS and also those who are not from NSFAS. And there is Wi-Fi access on all campuses and residences. The problem still becomes the data requirements when there is load shedding. So that becomes a problem for students. So when there are opportunities to provide data for students outside the available Wi-Fi access, that is a necessity as we are looking at blended teaching while students are on campus. Looking at the table that we have here, we are looking on the right side. We're looking at, I don't know if I can shift this slide down or not. It looks like I can't. On the right-hand side, what we're looking at there are the campuses which have got Wi-Fi. You find out that all of them do have. And then the second column from the right, those campuses which are offering a data to their students. And you'll find out that not all campuses are offering, or not all institutions are offering data to their students. And then when you look at the teaching, you'll find out that there are very few universities which are doing full-time face-to-face teaching. So it's face-to-face together with blended. So that requires that students must have access to the devices and the data outside the load shedding, during the load shedding, and that means that provision for data is essential. And right now, it's not done by all institutions or provided by all institutions. UNISA remains distance learning. Also, it does have data Wi-Fi in its campuses, but doesn't provide data to students. So in that case, then that would mean that there is a need for that. Going on to student accommodation, we have a level of detail on what student beds are available on campus and student list accommodation, and also accommodation which has been accredited. So far, it appears as if 7 universities are indicating that they will have a shortage of accommodation. Bear in mind that 5 of the institutions have not provided the data, the full data yet. The other concerns pertaining to accommodation is one that we have mentioned as the capacity of NSFAS to manage student accommodations directly, allocations. I think you've heard that there isn't proper integration of systems yet between NSFAS and the universities. So that then becomes a problem because it will have to be done manually. The need for NSFAS to consider university accommodation and university list accommodation first, before private accommodation, to ensure that the public infrastructure that government has invested in is appropriately utilized, will be another issue that will have to be looked at. So if we look at these institutions, if you focus on the right-hand side, some institutions have clearly outlined that they are not likely to have a problem with accommodation. And you look at university-provided accommodation, list beds, together with accredited accommodation altogether, some are saying they are not envisaging any problem, but it becomes important that those university beds are filled first and the university list beds are filled before accredited private accommodation is utilized. Depending on the duration of the leases that universities have with these private providers. So, honorable members, this is a summary of what I've just spoken about on the issues which are likely to be a problem when the year starts. On the long term, it's just the sustainability. The subsidies that we get may be impacted by the budget requirements of NSFAS, we don't know. Student funding, there's uncertainty there in terms of timing, tuition fee regulation. So far, we're talking about accommodation regulation. We hope it doesn't get to tuition fees. Public sector research funding is dwindling. Private sector research funding is dwindling. International research funding, also there are issues there depending on the international context that we know is also not that stable. So on the short-term sustainability, we are hoping for the sufficient funding for NSFAS. Otherwise, if there isn't, then there may be problems. And keeping the subsidy intact in the process, we know that universities do rely heavily on the subsidies from government. Funding for the missing middle students, which is a source of a debt for universities, it becomes a problem. And of course, student debt, the management of that, the reduction of that in such a way that it doesn't grow, and the provision of student accommodation, which is quality accommodation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Matutu. From New South, I'd like for Dr. Sisi or Prof. Sisi Pantosa for that particular presentation from SAPCO. I believe that Dr. Sisi is with Ms. Kekane, who's the SG, as well as Ms. Ula, who's the TG of SAPCO. What happened at the SAPCO conference?
To the honorable members of the portfolio committee, the chairperson, the senior officials of the Department of Higher Education, the board chairperson of NESFAS and the CEO and the delegation, the NEC members of SABCO, the student leadership, leadership of the university sector. Allow me to say all protocol is observed. Chairperson, I'm here representing the South African Public Colleges Organization to report on the state of readiness for academic year 2023. My presentation will be talking to the background, the college readiness, the province. We took colleges in terms of the provinces because SABCO is led provincially, or our structures are in terms of the provinces. So as part of the background, we just want to highlight that the TVET sector in general is constrained due to a number of challenges. We serve a student population coming from poor families. And there's also an increased demand for TVET sector from our young people, but it is evident that there's also a constraint in terms of funding. Our current funding norms do not accommodate this high demand that we have for the sector to grow, and access to TVET college sector becomes one of the constrained environments due to the fact that we are given limitations in terms of the targets for enrollment. There's also prevailing funding pressure continuing to place on the budget of the personnel budget for colleges. We are in the process of post-provisioning norms for colleges, and that has put so much constraint in terms of how the room for growth for colleges. There were notable challenges experienced during COVID-19 pandemic in terms of modes of learning and teaching. And as a sector, we tried to adjust to that effect. And NESFAS management fee still poses a challenge for effective execution of duties by colleges. What do we mean by that? We are managing functions for student funding as colleges. And a part of the funding mechanisms for students is NESFAS. And we have engaged them to that effect that the post-provisioning norms don't give us room to have a bigger number of staff complement to manage student funding. And therefore, we would need some additional support financially for us to be able to expand on the staff establishment. But we agreed, and we haven't realized that objective yet. Insufficient funding allocation, particularly for financially needy students and academically deserving students, is a major challenge. The limitations of the budget in terms of the number of students that we can accommodate still remains a challenge. Delays in disbursement of students allowances has caused some unrest in some of the colleges. I heard that, you know, there has been consistency from the side of NESFAS to provide for student allowances, but we still remain with unhappy students. That would always be raising an issue, especially during the beginning of the year. That is why the president of the SRC of Motheo TVET College indicated a need for alignment of the academic year and activities of NESFAS, just to enable students to be able to access accommodation and not be found wanting, looking for accommodation, and not being able to be well catered for. Our reporting in terms of college readiness, it's gathered around the following indicators. Has the college implemented early registration system? Does the college allow walk-ins? Are timetables available? Do they have textbooks? Do we do student induction? What is the mode of teaching? Is the college ready for student placement? And as I indicated earlier, we categorized our reporting in terms of provinces and listed the colleges in that particular province. We have East Cape Midlands Tivet College in the Eastern Cape and King Hintsa, who are confirming that the early registration process has commenced and they do allow walk-ins. They have provisional timetables at East Cape Midlands, but not yet at King Hintsa. It could be as a result of consultations and the allocations of lecturers for the new academic year. They order textbooks the current year, but you'll notice as I progress with my presentation that the delivery of textbooks is normally in January, the beginning of the year. That is as a result of the demand and the suppliers being available to deliver at that particular time. All colleges would are doing its student induction, and with East Cape Midlands, they do blended learning. But it is a different case in terms of King Hintsa. They are using physical. I think for now, some colleges would be totally 100% physical because the situation allows. But during COVID-19, colleges were using different modes of learning to reach out to students. Not all of them due to the issues of funding and the infrastructure, ICT connectivity not being up to spec for them to be able to reach out to all students. But the majority of the colleges were utilizing different platforms to that effect. Placement, you would notice that as I progress with my presentation, you would say all colleges are participating in terms of placement of students because it is driven from the Office of SAPCO. To date, we have placed close to 8,000 students for with placement. Eastern Cape continues to have PE College that is also confirming early registration process, allowing walk-ins and draft timetables being replaced and textbooks being ordered as already. Mm-hmm. And they are also resorting to physical contact. We have Goldfields in the Free State, which is also complying as such with no challenges indicated. What they have highlighted there is that the LMS at the moment, and it's only supporting face-to-face teaching and learning. It means it's not yet quite advanced for them to, for teaching and learning to happen outside the premises of the institution. With Maluti Tivet College, they are also complying as such. They have also put aside the budget for 2023 for work-based experiential learning to take place and for work-integrated learning to continue as such. And they are working collaboratively with the CETAs. With Mateo Tivet College, it is complying, but no walk-ins are allowed. Due to the how advanced the system is currently for students to be able to apply online. We experience high numbers at this institution. At the current moment, when checking with colleagues, they said they have received 48,000 applications for new entrants. And as the demand is quite high, they try at all times to make sure that they process applications on time. So blended learning is also used, both physical and online learning and a number of adherence to the regulations and a plan for student interactions also followed. Housing Ekurhuleni West TVET College, they have online early registration implemented and they are using a number of different platforms to that effect. They have limited special codes to special codes for walk-ins because of the nature of the registration process that they are following. For timetables, they have set aside the date of the 18th of November for submission of timetables, and they are in process in terms of procurement of textbooks for the following year. They said in terms of student induction, there are plans that campus management present to the college senior officials in terms of how the student induction unfolds. They also following blended learning program, and they are using student profiler for placement of students, which is an online system for TVET colleges. Funny enough, they are also complying and they have set targets for student placement for 2023, and they are also partnering with different workplaces for them to be able to access proper placement. Ordering of textbooks at the end of November will be done in deliveries in January. Western TVET College in Gauteng, they are also complying, not yet there in terms of textbooks, but they anticipated deliveries taking place the beginning of January. Their mode of teaching and learning is physical. Elangeni in KZN, they are also complying. They are not also allowing walk-ins due to the high volume of the applications they received. They indicated that they have received new applications to the tune of 45,000. So it is quite a high demand. It shows how young people are eager to be at our institutions and in need of support. That is why earlier on we flagged the issue of the constraints in terms of funding. SIED, they are also having a similar arrangement, no walk-ins, not yet in terms of timetables. I think it's a matter of different faculties dealing with allocations at this time of the year. But before end of academic year, they shall have been able to develop necessary allocations on the timetable. They are using also blended learning, and they've got a placement system in place. Nambiti, they also have got early registrations, online enrollments done, and no walk-ins also, and timetables still to be submitted the 2nd of December. Requisitions have been placed for procurement of textbooks, and they will hold student induction the second week of January. They're using blended learning and placement and pre-enrollment is using the learner profiler is also underway. Tashana, they are also complying and they've got draft timetables in place. Orders are based on for textbooks are based on the projections for 2023. And the planned date for student induction is on the 18th of January. They do not have yet the online, but plans are underway for them to be able to conduct blended learning. Tegwini, they are also complying. They also don't allow walk-ins. It's as a result of the high demand as well. They are using blended learning and they are ready with textbooks for 2023. They have provisional timetables in place. Follow-through, no timetables yet. They will be finalized in 2023, the beginning of the year. and orders are being processed for 2023 for textbooks. And they are also using blended learning. Capricorn, they have implemented early registration system, no walk-ins, also as a result of the high demand and them having prepared for early registration to take place. They have electronic textbooks procured for students for 2023. Induction is in progress, planning for 2023, and they are using blended learning. Mopani, they are complying, also do not have walk-ins as well. Letaba, they are complying and using blended learning as well. Kukune, they are also complying in general, but using physical face-to-face mode of teaching and learning. Sembe, also complying, no walk-ins allowed. I think this, most of the bigger colleges where there's high demand, you would notice that they have sharpened the systems to be able to accommodate early registrations and not allowing walk-in registrations as such. They have blended learning in use, and they have already taken stock of textbooks for next year, and delivery is expected end of November. Waterbeck is also equally complying, and no walk-ins as such. They are using physical face-to-face mode of teaching and learning. Hartsibande, they are also complying, and in Kangala, they haven't had the early registration. The college is used its own online on-site application to select qualifying students for the next registration cycle. This college believes they have enough capacity for them to be able to handle the registrations as such. The draft timetables are in place, purchase orders are done and waiting for deliveries for textbooks. They are using blended learning as well. Northern Cape Rural, they are complying. Timetables will be ready by the end of November, and final allocation of staff is being managed as well. The same with Eben, Tivet College. They are not using online learning at the moment. It's face-to-face. Orbit, they are complying as such, but also conducting physical classes for delivery of teaching and learning, with a small percentage of students studying fully online. So they are also using learner profiler for placement of students. Western Cape, we've got the three colleges complying, but with College of Cape Town not yet having procured textbooks and timetables not yet available. The indication there is a consultation at faculty level, but before the end of the academic year, they shall have procured the necessary teaching and learning support material. False Bay is embarking on physical face-to-face teaching and learning process, and they started their early registration since August. And Northlink is also complying, and they are also having distance learning as part of the mode of teaching and learning, and a student a placement is also conducted on a yearly basis, and they have induction also done immediately after registration of students. We continue with Western Cape, West Coast. They have closed application and applications end of September, and they are busy processing such applications. They do have walk-in applications if they allow them, and they are busy with the procurement of textbooks and timetables. And will be end of November. They are using blended learning and they are ready for placement of students using for web-based experiential learning. In conclusion, Chair, SACPO has since done the following to ensure readiness of the academic year for 2023. We conducted discussions with NSFAS and AGT, and progress in that regard is at very snail's pace, as we have indicated that there are certain matters that we have highlighted. NSFAS still has no plan to pay project management fee as yet, and which will, you know, negatively affect the delivery of services at colleges. Participation in the review of bursary rules and guidelines for us to influence processes at the for student funding. Colleges are now discouraging walk-ins and implementing early registrations in the prior year, even though it's not all colleges that have successfully done so. And then communication to NSFAS and TVETs needs to be improved. We need to assign delegated persons to work with TVET colleges from NSFAS. We know that it happens at other colleges, but it might not be a very firm arrangement as such. Mostly NSFAS must pay the agreed amount. I think the main issue here is around management fees by colleges as a result of limitation of human capacity, and SACPO to maximize digitization drive for colleges. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Sissy, and all colleagues from SACPO. I'd like to ask that the SG of Self-Transport to make his presentation.
Yeah, you said it's a brief. I see other people are brief. Good enough.
Yeah, I think it's there.
Well, thanks, Chair. Greetings to you. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Comrade Katwa. Honorable Katwa. I know you from the Comrade branches. Sorry, and your colleagues. Greetings to DHET, as led by the DG, colleagues from USAF, as led by Dr. Tutu, NSFAS, led by the board and the executive, and of course, the leadership from SACPO. I see that we are the only ones who've been brought in, because we're told that we must come and give a brief, presentation on the preparedness and possible concerns that might, you know, but other people were not brief, but it's fine, Chair. We'll do the same next time. I will not waste time, Chair, but I will go straight to the issues. South is coming from NGC, Comrade Letsie, from the 10th of, to the 13th of November, we're in Mpumalanga. Number of issues raised by the FRC and this NGC, and of course, in relation to the SFAS, particularly in relation to the new funding guidelines, it was the, you know, the issue of the approval of the proposed changes into the guidelines. As you might be aware that once there are changes, there must be a concurrence by the minister. So they raise a concern because we normally make inputs, and then come January, our inputs are not even considered. So SRC felt strongly that we should get that feedback before the end of this year in terms of the proposed change, so that we know that if we're fighting in January, we know this year that we're preparing for the fight in January. Number two is in line with the issue of the accreditation, the new direction that NSFAS is taking. I hear the presentation by the NSFAS team in relation to the to this issue, but seemingly it has not been finalized. So the concern that SRC was raising was that the year now is ending. If now the accreditation is not started for the next year, how is it still viable that this process is going to be undertaken by NSFAS? And what could be the challenges that might be posed to institutions and to students who are living in those accommodations, knowing that the entity is taking over this? The funding decision, check, I think this one is very important because it's mostly affecting students, particularly at the beginning of the year. So this concern was informed by the fact that communities here, normally the funding decisions are withheld because of the budget. Yes.
You
must understand, I'm not an MP, Honorable Nobindu. So, this thing of Honorable, you know, sometimes I forget about them. So, the issue of the funding decisions was, of course, informed by the issue of, you know, for the past two academic years, NSFAS was not in a position to confirm them because of the funding. But I think from the presentation that I got, that one for this upcoming year has been resolved. I think it must be communicated out there that the funding decisions will not be delayed come the 2023 academic year. But most importantly, I think the amongst the issues that they've raised, the issue of the funded list. Now that the funded list tends to delay, in effect, it affects the issue of experience. In the NGC, we deliberated to these issues, but one of the biggest resolution was that let's engage all stakeholders in the sector around these matters. Let us ensure that all of us were on the same page, but also the union is of the same view that they had USAF, SACPO, SAUS, ADVETSA, NSFAS, before the beginning of next year. We need to be in one table, we sit, so that we clarify all the gray areas in relation to the 2023 academic year. Amongst the key issues that the union has sent me to raise into this portfolio committee, the first one, I think, is the biggest white elephant in the house, the debt clearance. Would agree with me, Chair, that I think we are the only country in Africa that is most, or that is the biggest debt, student debt, which is almost more than 14 billion as things stand. So the union said I should sponsor a view to this portfolio committee that maybe we should do something about it. One of the recommendations that I was, we were discussing about was to say the private sector is the biggest beneficiary in terms of our public institutions. And they tend to take the top cream of the crop in terms of our students. But when it comes to these challenges that we're facing, they're nowhere to be found. So maybe to put the head and through this portfolio committee, let's try to, try to bring them closer so that they can be a role that they can play. Post-graduate funding, Honorable Chair, is amongst the biggest challenges that we're having. And we've learned this, and post-COVID-19, let me say, from the COVID-19 till now, we have learned that students tend to have more hunger in terms of doing their post-grad studies. But the challenge that we're having is that there is no enough funding for that. What do we do? How do we ensure that, in terms of NRF, there's a relaxation, because NRF tend to be very stifled in terms of how students are accessing NRF in terms of the, minimum requirements. Sometimes they would want 75%, average and all those things. So how do you expect, for instance, the first beneficiary who comes from the poor and the working class to perform at that, I'm not saying it's not possible, but if someone is being funded by NSFAS, by the ratio of that someone being funded by NSFAS, it tells you that that person is not coming from a well-off family. So even though he's a student, but there are some other activities in terms of the family responsibility that must be taken care of. So how do you ensure that, NRF, takes into account these issues? funding for F10, I think this one is in relation to my latter point to say, is it possible to confirm that come 2023, there won't be a delay in terms of the funding decisions? Because, it costed us a lot this year, Honorable Chair, because, we have to now go and beg institutions to say those who are able to pay, can they release funds? Because, even for allowances, because even for the returning students, even though they were funded, but the issues of allowances were not there. The portfolio committee chair must be able to have a view on the issue of the fee increment. As South was saying, we don't want any fee increment. We know that for the fact that the institutions have not spoken about it because they are waiting for this moment to pass. So that come January, they communicate, because their last councils are sitting in December. So no students will be on campus in that particular period. Students are back at home. And I can assure you, Chair, in those last council meetings, the issue of the fee increment will be discussed and they will resolve for them. They have delayed it deliberately because they don't want any noise around it. So we are not in the portfolio committee to assist us in this one. To say, when we say zero fee increment, we're saying any adjustment that that is unjustifiable, will not be accepted. Otherwise, it will make us go to the streets. For education, Chair, I think the portfolio committee must assist us in ensuring that we intensify this call. I think this is the only progressive, call that this portfolio committee in whatever corner that we enter, we must always speak about. Because up until education is free, and then we believe that our country, should reap the fruits that it is. The issue of the NSFAS appeals remains the problem. I think we have made our input in terms of the new guidelines to say that we have been calling for the independent tribunal that must deal with appeals. Because you can't be the referee and the player at the same time, Chair. Decide issue applications, assess applications, decide to decline, and then decide to assess the appeals. We are saying there must be an independent body that must deal with appeals. That independent body can include the portfolio committee, the REP from there. It must include us. It must include yourself. It must include SACPO. It must include, major stakeholders who have a common, with whom we share a common interest with within the sector. Funding for the missing middle, Honorable, we still believe that we haven't done much on this one. And this is the main point that contributes largely into the student debt. Because students enter university with no funding, they only try to contribute to other registration, but throughout the system, there is no intervention in terms of their fees and all that. And when we're engaging with SRCs around this issue, because on the recommendations that were shared by the department in terms of the MTT report, we shared with the SRCs, we discussed them in the NGC. The SRCs, you know, they are welcome, the recommendation, in terms of saying, if they can be, you know, manageable government loans to deal with the issue of the missing middle. But of course, they must be managed, because it can't be that we can sell our students to loan sharks. So to say, the percentage itself that will be, or the interest rate, it must be managed one to ensure that it does not disadvantage students post they're finished in their qualifications. So I'm saying, let's explore that, but let's extend, you know, conversation, so that we ensure that everyone is comfortable with the conversation, so that we don't just implement something that might become a problem at a later stage. I think the portfolio committee, I think it must have its interest around the issues of the academic roles. We strongly believe that for a very long time, we tend not to be interested in terms of what is happening in students. That's where our students are dealt with, particularly when it comes to academic roles. We must be interested, because, you know, for instance, we're not saying we promote, you know, students not to success, but let's say if a student has been excluded, you know, sometimes we're coming from uninformed backgrounds. I just applied because I want to access the university. But I realized later on that, hey, what I've chosen is not what I thought it is, or it's not what I can cope with, to get the point. Now, the difficulty is that what these academics are doing, when we're excluded in this particular program, it becomes difficult for you to switch to another program. Now, they say you must first pass this one, and then you can apply for the transfer to another. You know, it's more like saying, fail up until you give up, and then exit the system. So I'm saying, let's try to look at those issues so that we can at least save, you know, more of our students before they can be, you know, excluded by the system. The union also sent me to say that the learning devices for the F10s, now that you are participating in the blended learning, I think it must be something that must be compulsory come the year of 2023. And we believe that upon the registration, F10 must receive a device, whether it's a laptop or it's a tablet, but a device that will enable them to participate and in doing their academic work. We also strongly believe, Chair, that through, you know, this new format of blended, you know, learning and teaching and learning, the increase in enrollment quotas is possible. Why do you say that? Because some students are doing their work while they're sitting nicely at home. No longer now, you should say the lecture hall is going to be full. So why don't we explore now to say that at least we can stretch our targets, DDG, to ensure that, because there is a serious need now for education. Post-COVID-19, it has told us that, you know, majority of the youth now, they want to go and further their studies, because they've realized that, you know, the unknown pandemic that might come, it might be even, you know, be even, you know, dangerous than COVID-19. So we believe that the blended learning return to come. We're saying, let's continue with the blended learning for students who are able to participate. There must not be enforcement of saying, let's go back to campus. But if students can be able to participate, where they are, I mean, for the past 2 years of COVID-19, students were able to do their work. They were able to write examinations and all those things. Chair, I think we speak less about student victimization, particularly student leadership. You know, Chair, if I get suspended or expelled as a SRC president of a campus, you know that raises a very big fear to students who are looking up to me as their leader into their campus. Because if I can be suspended as a president of the campus, I mean, so who are they, you know, for them to go to the streets and fight for them? I'm saying, let's try to ensure that through Yusuf, and I'm glad that Yusuf is here, because the perpetrators of this, Dr. Matutu, are vice chancellors. We have vice chancellors there who are not open for criticism. Not in, when I was, I said, there's a word that I'm looking for. Not just criticism, constructive criticism. That's what I'm looking. That's the word I'm looking for. There are vice chancellors who are just honourable here, who are not, who have literally closed doors, who will have no interest in listening to your leadership. It's either their way or you're out. I have an example. I'm sure Shelley earlier this year you experienced. We were part of that portfolio committee when you called one of the institutions to come and account. How FRC's, the manner in which they were frustrated in terms of how they are fearing their executive in terms of raising the issues that are affecting students. Because once you raise these issues, if you've raised them in a manner that it does not sit well. So we have a situation where vice chancellors are treating some of these institutions as their spaza shops. And I think, Chair, through your colleagues and everyone, it's something that you must ensure that it must come to an end. I think through your staff as well, we want to lobby that there must be a flexible registration period come 2023. Because remember, you know that some students, you know, are transferring, some students, you know, they have issues of special exams, some students, you know, are having the issues of late, you know, marks from the supervisor. So I think this thing of, you know, being stringent in terms of the deadline date of registration, sometimes it causes problems. So I think there must be a flexible period for as long as we are still in line with the academic calendar. So just a brief check on the current status quo in institutions. All institutions currently, they're writing their year-end examinations. But one thing that must be marked is that through the NEFAS closed-out project, the most affected institutions are HDIs, historically disadvantaged institutions. So we're saying at least this issue of the closed-out project, it must be something that must be prioritized so that come next year, it's not because it's not becoming the, you know, the issue is enough. The wrong, I think, before I speak about the wrong implementation of N plus chair, I want to lobby you and your colleagues in the portfolio committee. The N plus role chair is a problem. Let's start with the problematic part of it. Honorable, the N plus role, if I entered university in 2020 without being funded by NSFAS, even if I was qualified, but without being funded by NSFAS, I enter, maybe I organize money for registration, I'm not funded. Maybe I miss the application period in 2020 for 2021, and then I happen to apply, and then I get funded for 2022. Now, NSFAS, N plus role, I'm told it's not NSFAS role, it's a DHEAD. It does not take into account, that's what they say, it does not take into account the period of when they started to fund you. They take into account the period when you entered the institution, the institution. So I'm not sure if you're following me. So it means for the 2 years I was not funded, but I will only be funded for the remaining 2 years. But the N plus rule takes into account that I entered the institution in 2020. So I'm not sure whether by imagination from 2020 I was funded, even though I was not in the funded list. I'm saying it's something that must be removed because it's a problem. It's causing problems because a student studied 1 year in MUT and then maybe they go for a break and then they come and study in an institution. They were never funded. But now what they count is to say you studied in MUT in this year. And then now you're no longer qualified for the N plus role. But the argument is saying, but I was never funded by NSFAS. It's my first time to be funded by NSFAS. Who do you calculate the period while I was not funded as part of the N plus? So that is the biggest problem that we're having in N plus. And it's something that I think we must take it up with to the department because I'm not sure the person that drafted that policy, whether he was somewhere in desert or somewhere ever, where he was not thinking about the realities of our higher education, no realities. The dual registration issue, I think it remains the issue. This one, I think we need everyone to help us because it directly affects us as the union. Because now a student is accepted in MUT, he registers, and then forgets to register, and then he gets another offer in that, he goes and registers. Now all the institutions are claiming the money for the students. So now the money ends up being stacked on the system, and then the student has no funding because of this issue of the dual registration. But we've learned also that, Honorable Chair, that some other institutions even claim money for you, even if you are not registered, or which are fraudulent. So I'm saying, through you, staff, we must be assisted in this one, because there are universities who claim money for students who were just accepted but never registered into studying those institutions. So we're saying these things are causing problems for us, because now when you come to an institution or to an SRC, and then you are given a situation, and then you can't provide an answer, you look like a fool as a student leader, because it does not make sense to you. You don't know how to give a direct answer to say this should happen, because the money stuck somewhere. The student must go ahead, the student must go to MUT, and the MUT must communicate. And then there's very same institutions don't want to communicate to say that this student is no longer registered. Wherever the student is registered, the funds can be redirected. Some others have claimed the money are stuck with them, but those monies now, it's difficult for those monies to be transferred to where the student is being found. I'm saying these are the things that I'm a major when I chair that are affecting our students in the sector. So let me conclude by saying the portfolio committee needs to sponsor a motion to parliament on the issue of the $14 billion student debt. DHEAD and NSFAS must ensure that the issue of budget for 2023 is resolved before the end of this year. DHEAD, I think you must expedite the issue of funding for the missing middle. And we want to also appeal to say the issue of appeals, learning type devices and allowances, it's something that must be speedily resolved so that come 2023, we start smoothly. We as the union, we encourage the continuous student stakeholder engagement so that we don't remain in the dark. We continuously engage with others so that, we are abreast of the issues that are affecting us. With that being said, we thank you very much for the opportunity that you've given us. It's always, for us, it's always, it's nice for us to come to the portfolio committee, because you are a portfolio committee that listens, Honorable Nsiye. We came to you and we sponsored a motion in terms of saying, why don't we take on the issue of the institutional autonomy? And you have shown us, we have started, and there's a work that is being done. But we're saying let's continue to work with each other with an interest of ensuring that we one day become a better higher education sector in the country. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, SG.
Thank you very much, SG, and really we also appreciate the relationship that we have with student leadership. I would then be brief that Safeta will be represented by
can they talk?
Go on to you. Will you keep going? Guys, is she on the phone?
Thanks, Chair. Am I audible?
Much better.
No, thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, dignitaries from the DHET Tivel branch, dignitaries from the DHET University branch, our SAWU's counterpart. I'm here with Mr. Wongani Mkwali. My name is Genius Shabalala. I'm the provincial chair of SAFETSA in Mpumalanga. I'm from Kharisubane Tivet College. I'm here on behalf of Spio Kuman. My presentation, I don't know, I'm not in control of this presentation, but it's fine. I will ask the chair to assist me. The Tivet College has over the years been subjected to manual applications and enrollment. Those are walk-ins. We have had a prof saying the same thing about other Tivet colleges accepting walk-ins, and we want to eradicate that as soon as possible. These models didn't allow students to apply prior their academic year of study. And then that is what we're trying to phase out as the Tivet College, Tivet colleges across the country. Can you move to the second slide? The introduction of online application, this created a new advanced model to the hands of students, both current and new students. We have seen in most instances where many companies are bidding for the online processes throughout colleges, and we applaud that particular move, but we want it to move very swiftly, at least by 2024. Our projection is that by 2024, all Tivet colleges, all 50 of them, are on the same page as online application as far as it is concerned. It allowed new applicants to process their applications in their own comfort zone and apply at any college they wish to apply and without incurring any traveling costs. So these costs, you'll find that a student will travel maybe far away distances just to apply from any Tivet college as long as the Tivet colleges were established. It reduced the queues that you would usually find during enrollment. So in this particular regard, we would like to swiftly, as I've said before, that we would like to swiftly move away from walk-ins. Can you move to the next slide, Chair? Now, challenges presented by this online system. Some prospective students in the deep rural parts of the country struggle with connectivity to use the system. The system is not linked to the projected number in colleges per course, such that it doesn't limit application even when they've reached their expected numbers. So these applicants, we do have issues of connectivities, as we have seen, and we all know that Tivet colleges are regional based and town based and rural based, some of them. In most instances, you'll find that students don't have a connectivity. And even if when marketing would go and do your recruitment, because they do the marketing team of each college, it does recruitments in rural areas for enrollment. So you'll find that I'm looking for this word. When they do application for a person who's from the rural area, their system shuts down in based on connectivity. So those are a part of the challenges that we'll try to minimize in the near future. Move to the next, can you please move to the next slide? State of readiness for the academic year. Applications and pre-enrollment have resumed in some colleges, while others are still preparing to start with them. Like Prof has said before, the president of SAPO has said before that in line with what she has said, some have are still preparing and some have started already. New students are being assisted with the NSS application as they come to write their placement tests throughout all 50 colleges. That is currently happening. Can we move to the next slide? Proposed viable solution. Now, the PEC of SAFESA to work with colleges in their provinces to identify and assist those students in deep rural areas with enrollment. Now, we have since tried to assist all PEC members, especially chairpersons, to go and meet at least all principals to have a bilateral meeting as to how do we best assist our prospective students, those who come from deep rural areas. I would cite an example as in my province in Mpumalanga, we have tried to send emails to the principals and they've welcomed it with warm hands to want to speak to them as based on how do we best deal with the enrollment of students in deep rural areas. Create one central application system for colleges that is able to refer students to colleges and courses of interest per student. Now, colleagues, here we were simply saying in referral to COA of KZN to at least have one a centralized application system for any student to choose their institution of learning, so that the connectivity part does not have a problem, that we don't have a problem with connectivity, and then we have one central one across TVET colleges. But that discussion is yet to commence with our principal. Can we move to the next slide? In conclusion, SAFESA is highly committed to work with stakeholders in improving the conditions of our students. Like I said before, we are trying our level best to meet up with every stakeholder. Like we are doing, like I'll be traveling tomorrow to East London to meet officials of NSFAS to discuss. It's a workshop, of course, but there will be some discussions that we'll have with the NEC as well. President will be there as well. We will try to, by all means necessary, to resolve certain matters that are outstanding. I thank you, Portfolio Committee. I thought it was Council, but Portfolio Committee. Thank you. Can you move to the final slide? Thank you.
Apologies, colleagues. I said so much and acknowledged that we just noticed now that you were not hearing us. But I want to believe that you should be able to hear me now. So I'm going to hand over to honourable members, and then Annelie, if you can just we're going to start with honourable Makesi, honourable Boshoff, honourable Zondo, honourable Sibiya, honourable King, honourable Litie, honourable Mananiso, honourable Mashati. Thank you very much, Nimudi.
And then, I won't speak much anymore. I'll take my 5 minutes, 4 minutes. So it's now 12:55, and we have until.